The following is a review of economics principles and is designed to address the learning outcome statements set forth by CFA Institute. It is also covered in monetary and fiscal policy. The first LOS asks us to compare monetary and fiscal policy. Fiscal policy refers to a government's use of spending and taxation to influence economic activity. The budget is said to be balanced when tax revenues equal government expenditures. A budget surplus occurs when government tax revenues exceed expenditures, and a budget deficit occurs when government expenditures exceed tax revenues. Monetary policy refers to the central bank's actions that affect the quantity of money and credit in an economy in order to influence economic activity. Monetary policy is said to be expansionary or accommodative or easy when the central bank increases the quantity of money and credit in an economy. Conversely, when the central bank is reducing the quantity of money and credit in an economy, the monetary policy is said to be contractionary or restrictive or tight. Both monetary and fiscal policies are used by policymakers with the goals of maintaining stable prices and producing positive economic growth. Fiscal policy can also be used as a tool for redistribution of income and wealth. The next LOS is to describe functions and definitions of money. Money is most commonly defined as a medium of exchange. Rather than bartering, exchanging goods and services directly, using money facilitates indirect exchange. Money has three primary functions. Money serves as a medium of exchange or means of payment because it is accepted as payment for goods and services. Money also serves as a unit of account because prices of all goods and services are expressed in units of money, dollars, yen, rupees, pesos, and so forth. This allows us to determine how much of any good we are foregoing when consuming another. Money provides a store of value because money received for work or goods now can be saved to purchase goods later. Narrow money is the amount of notes and coins in circulation in an economy plus balances in checkable bank deposits. Broad money includes narrow money plus any amount available in liquid assets which can be used to make purchases. Measures of money differ among monetary authorities, but there is consistency in that broad measures of money include money that is less liquid or immediately spendable than that included in narrow money measures. For example, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the money supply measures reflect the different degrees of liquidity or spendability that different types of money have. The narrowest measure, M1, is restricted to the most liquid forms of money. It consists of currency in the hands of the public, traveler's checks, demand deposits, and other deposits against which checks can be written. M2 includes M1 plus savings accounts, time deposits of under $100,000, and balances in retail money market mutual funds. The next LOS requires us to explain the money creation process. In the early stages of money development, promissory notes were developed. When customers deposited gold or other precious metal with early bankers, they were issued a promissory note, which was a promise by the banker to return that gold on demand from the depositor. Promissory notes themselves then became a medium of exchange. Bankers, recognizing that all the deposits would never be withdrawn at the same time, started lending a portion of deposits to earn interest. This led to what is called fractional reserve banking. In a fractional reserve banking system, a bank holds a proportion of deposits in reserve. In most countries, banks are required to hold a minimum percentage of deposits as reserves. When cash is deposited in a bank, the portion that is not required to be held in reserve can be loaned out. When a bank makes a cash loan and the borrower spends the money, the sellers who receive this cash may deposit it in banks as well. These funds can now be loaned out by these banks, except for the portion that must be held as reserves by each bank. This process of lending, spending, and depositing can continue until deposits are some multiple of the original cash amount. Consider a bank that has $1,000 in excess reserves, or cash not needed for reserves, that it lends. Assume the required reserve ratio is 25%. If the borrower of the $1,000 deposits the cash in a second bank, the second bank will be able to lend its excess reserves of $750, or 75% of the $1,000. Those funds may be deposited in a third bank, which can then lend its excess reserve of $563, which is 75% of the $750. If this lending and depositing continues, the money supply can expand to $4,000. With 25% of deposits held as reserves, the original deposit can result in total deposits four times as large, and we say that the money multiplier is 4. The money multiplier can be stated as 1 divided by the reserve requirement. If the required reserve percentage is decreased, the money multiplier increases and the quantity of money that can be created increases. If the reserve requirement was reduced from 25 to 10%, the money multiplier would increase from 4 to 10. The money supply is related to the price level. The quantity theory of money states that quantity of money is some proportion of the total spending in an economy and implies the quantity equation of exchange. Money supply times velocity equals real output times the price level, or M times V equals P times Y. Price level multiplied by real output is total spending, so that velocity is the average number of times per year each unit of money is used to buy goods or services. The equation of exchange must hold with velocity defined in this way. Monetarists believe that velocity and the real output of the economy change only slowly. Assuming that velocity and real output remain constant, any increase in the money supply will lead to a proportionate increase in the price level. For example, a 5% increase in the money supply will increase average prices by 5%. For this reason, monetarists argue that monetary policy can be used to control and regulate inflation. The belief that real variables are not affected by monetary variables is referred to as money neutrality. The next LOS requires us to describe theories of the demand for and supply of money. The amount of wealth that households and firms in an economy choose to hold in the form of money is known as demand for money. There are three reasons for holding money. Transaction demand. Money held to meet the need for undertaking transactions. As the level of real GDP increases, the size and number of transactions will increase, and the demand for money to carry out transactions increases. Precautionary demand. Money held for unforeseen future needs. The demand for money for precautionary reasons is higher for large firms. In the aggregate, the total amount of precautionary demand for money increases with the size of the economy. Speculative demand. Money that is available to take advantage of investment opportunities that arise in the future. It is inversely related to returns available in the market. As bonds and other financial instruments provide higher returns, investors would rather invest their money now than hold speculative money balances. Conversely, the demand for money for speculative reasons is positively related to perceived risk in other financial instruments. If the risk is perceived to be higher, people choose to hold money rather than invest it. At lower interest rates, firms and households choose to hold more money. At higher interest rates, the opportunity cost of holding money increases, and firms and households will desire to hold less money and more interest-bearing financial assets. The supply of money is determined by the central bank and is independent of the interest rate. Thus, we say the supply curve for money is perfectly inelastic. Short-term interest rates are determined by the equilibrium between money supply and money demand. If the interest rate is above the equilibrium rate, there is excess supply of real money. Firms and households are holding more real money balances than they desire to, given the opportunity cost of holding money balances. They will purchase securities to reduce their money balances, which will decrease the interest rate as securities prices are bid up. If interest rates are below equilibrium, there is excess demand for real money balances. Firms and households will sell securities to increase their money holdings to the desired level, decreasing securities prices and increasing the interest rate. A central bank can affect short-term interest rates by increasing or decreasing the money supply. An increase in the money supply, represented as a shift of the money supply curve to the right, will put downward pressure on interest rates. With an increase in the money supply, there is an excess supply of money at the previous rate. To reduce their money holdings, firms and households buy securities, increasing securities prices and decreasing the interest rate until the new equilibrium interest rate is achieved. If the central bank decreases the money supply, excess demand for money balances results in sales of securities and an increase in the interest rate. The next LOS is to describe the Fisher effect. The Fisher effect states that the nominal interest rate is simply the sum of the real interest rate and expected inflation. The idea behind the Fisher effect is that real rates are relatively stable and changes in interest rates are driven by changes in expected inflation. This is consistent with money neutrality. Investors are exposed to the risk that inflation and other future outcomes may be different than expected. Investors require additional return or a risk premium for bearing this risk, which we can consider a third component of a nominal interest rate.